All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our daily Major League Baseball podcast for Friday, August 12th. I'm Doug Norrie.
I'm James Davis.
you got your name in there. We're here, and it's going to be a hot cast, but not as hot as it was the other day, because we switched locations into a room that's just unbearably hot, rather than we might die hot. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you get started with Major League Baseball lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. You head over to our site, you grab some free content, you read some of our thoughts, what our system's spitting out for that day. And then you can actually get access to those projections where you can calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings powered by our good friends at Lineup Lab. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. You're all good to go. NFL coming really soon. We're really pumped. It's going to be a little bit of a quicker podcast today. James is getting on the road, so we're going to get through most of what we can get through here for what's going on for Friday. A couple interesting things. I want to talk. We can either talk about this now or later. A-Rod's pricing on FanDuel. Should we wait till we talk about hitters?
Let's go right into it.
Okay, so FanDuel does a little wink, wink, nod, nod. This is A-Rod's last game as the Yankees send them off to the farm, where you tell your kids what happens to your dog, where your parents tell what happens to your dog. They say, oh, he went off to a farm. That's like the equivalent of him becoming like a consultant, or them just like letting him go and saying, oh, no, it's all good, but we're just not going to have him on the team anymore.
He won't be in a dugout. He won't be in any press interviews.
He kind of just won't be here anymore at all because we hate his guts, but he's going to get one last game. FanDuel prices him at $696 for the amount of home runs he's hit this or in his career, and it's obviously a joke. It's an interesting joke because, I don't know, I kind of applaud it slash hate it. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's funny. I don't know.
I think it's funny. I just don't think it kind of like goes away probably with their central idea of what their overall goals are.
So you think it's too funny. It's too cute to, because there's just going to be some players who just didn't notice or whatever. They see that people had someone at 696 and they're grumpy because they lost.
Yeah, it seems like a mistake. I don't know. It just seems like it's not really what you do when you're like setting what we consider to be like odds, maybe. Or like, I don't know. It's just,
well, this is just a game of skill people play on the internet, Doug. There's no, okay.
so no with gambling that, involved. With that said, I'm talking strictly cash games on FanDuel. Do you have to play him at that price?
Yeah. I mean, it's a math problem, right? We've played guys at 2,200, for instance, or 2,000, who just happen to be batting high in the lineup, who basically don't do anything else other than be cheap. You could make a case for, if the position were bad enough on a given day, just playing no one for 700,
right?
On some days. So with A-Rod at 696, as long as he's going to get two plate appearances or something, his expectation will meet that price pretty easily.
Yeah, I was running through the optimal lineups real quick and just actually giving him different sets of projected points just to see at what's the breaking point on that salary on this slate, this early at least. What's the breaking point on that salary? And it was basically he needed to be projected for 5 points. So that's a weighted average. That's not saying he's going to score 5 points. He's been super bad this year. But it just means, on average, he needs to score 5 points. We have him for higher than that. We have him for somewhere like around 8 points. That's like the 27th highest third baseman. So it's not like we think he's good by any means. But it right around 5 points of projection would be where he starts coming out if some other third baseman gets into the optimal lineups. 5 points, just for a reference point, is basically the equivalent of a bad number eight hitter facing Kershaw, like in Petco. So that's just not A-Rod if he's hitting fourth in the lineup, even at this, this shell of what he once was. So that's really, like you said, it's the math problem. It's pretty easy for me. You just, if he's hitting the middle of the lineup, you have to do it.
Yep.
All right, so we have that little nugget out of the way. Let's get into the pitching on today's slate. Couple of interesting guys here. We have
it is kind of a tougher choice today.
We have a couple of aces, and then we have some next tier down guys, and then some pitchers that are in line for the wins. Where I'm just like, ooh, can we think about this guy? Where do we start? Like we said, for cash games, who's coming in is probably maybe the safest play today. You think
the safest play looks like Strasburg? Yeah, he's the most expensive, so not breaking any news there, but it's a phenomenal matchup with the Braves, and he's really awesome. I mean, that's the 1,000-foot view on it. Worth noting with the Braves, they actually are a bottom six team in strikeouts against right-handed pitchers, but when they do make contact, they're kind of like, we talked about teams like this before where they just don't do anything with it at all. So if you're looking for safety, they're one of the teams in the league that's the least likely to put up a big inning. So
yeah, they
that makes
one,
them pretty safe.
One bat in the middle of the lineup who is actually good in Freeman. And then, you know, and then just a bunch of just sort of nobodies. You know, they add a bunch of strikeouts in the middle of the order with, like, by getting, for some reason, getting Matt Kemp. And there's really Adonis Garcia on those plays. I mean, these guys, this is just not a good team. I'm actually a little surprised. Our system is not as high on Strasburg as I thought it'd be. He's high. He's the overall points per, he's the overall raw points pitcher, but and it's not by a couple, like point and a half, 2 points. But it's not a runaway. Like, I thought it would be between this money line and this and the opponent. I actually thought it would be a total runaway for him, and it's not. So that's actually something I'll go back and investigate today, is why he's the best, but not far and away the best, considering it seems like he has everything else in his favor going for him today. But I'm with you. He's the clear cut play. He's pitching at home. Huge favorite. Braves stink. Blah blah blah.
Yeah, we can get into some of the other top guys, and if you just want to compare safety, like David Price is a guy people will look at today. Big money line. Boston's heavily favored in Boston. Price been fairly solid at home. The issue there though is that the Diamondbacks are just solid against left-handed pitching. They I think they're either the best or the second best. Let's see, second best in the league in terms of WOBA against lefties this season. It is a top 10 strikeout rate, so he's a guy you can consider for upside in big tournaments, but not a guy I'm going to be excited about playing in cash games, even at the pretty significant price reduction to Strasburg today.
Yeah, it's really funny on Price. So he comes to the Red Sox this year. Some of his, a lot of his numbers are exactly the same as the ace, quote-unquote ace, that we thought the Red Sox were getting, and I still do think they have an ace, but his strikeouts are exactly the same, 9.19. This is to last year, you know, he was on two teams.
Yep.
His xFIPs are pretty much exactly the same, 3.2, let's just call it by rounding. But the difference for him is that last year his ERA was 2.45, this year it's 4.34. Really nothing else about his game is different except home run to fly ball rate. Now, sometimes home run to fly ball rate is, are you running bad on just balls scraping over the wall? Maybe. But when you actually move from Tampa to Fenway for a lefty, you are just going to have a higher, it stands to reason that you'll have a higher home run to fly ball rate, because you just only need to get the ball up in the air up over that green monster. So I'm a little confused. Like, I know what our system thinks. Our system looks at him still as an ace level pitcher, and by all accounts, he pretty much is. His peripherals are still great, and like I said, the xFIP is really good. But I just get worried that I can't. I'm having a little trouble evaluating that home. Like, he's giving up a lot of home runs, and I just it seems probably sustainable considering the park.
Yeah, he's giving up a lot of home runs, and he's also having BABIP issues this year too. His BABIP is 40 points higher than his career average. Again, worth noting that Fenway, especially for lefties, is going to increase BABIP, because just like you, if you don't hit it over the monster, if you just bang it off the top of it, that's an automatic hit. So I think that it's probably, it's somewhere in between. I don't think he's going to be the 2.4 ERA guy he was last year in Fenway, but I do think he can get down in those mid to low threes, and the elite K rate is going to make him a consideration, especially given that you're not paying Strasburg level prices for him. You know?
And the reason why I brought up those stats is those are stats that we usually do point to with certain players and say, this guy's running super bad, but that's when all the other contextual things are the same.
Yeah,
and
exactly. That's a great point.
Like, so it's when, you know, all these things are the same year over year or relatively the same. For Price, there's been a huge change in one particular thing, and it's park. And so that's where I just get a little worried that our system hasn't totally factored that in yet, and it is bringing him close to Strasburg, and it does have me a little concerned.
Yeah, and I think if we're looking at the world of DFS as a market, the inefficiencies in the market are in two major areas. It's evaluating players moving from park to park, and probably just overall opportunity. So, you know, people have gotten a lot better at batting lineup evaluation, for instance, but for pitchers, it's also how they're used by their respective teams. I actually haven't broken this down and looked at it, but if, you know, it, well, I guess I can look at this really quick. Yeah, so last year he averaged more than 7 innings per start. This year, not so much. So, you know, who knows, if that could be a team strategy. It could be, again, the park. It could be given that he's having a tougher time with BABIP and home runs and all that stuff. But, you know, all of a sudden you kind of mix all those things together. Lower opportunity, you know, tougher park, and things can kind of spiral out of control in terms of a game like baseball, where we're talking about a game of inches, Doug, where just the littlest things can really change things a lot.
Yeah, so I'm going to need to really evaluate this later on in the day, because like I said, our system's geared more to cash games, and we want to have it be that way.
Yeah, the default settings are, you can certainly set them for more big tournament settings.
Oh, of course, right. Yeah,
the default. If you just go in there and click the pink button that says calculate, you're gonna get a cash game lineup.
And so it's seeing you're getting, you know, 10-15% price reduction from Strasburg to Price. So that's one thing I'll look at a little closer today. After those two guys, A couple other interesting arms on here, namely being that the big ones are Darvish, Carrasco, and Archer.
Yep.
Of those three players, and they're all, I mean, on FanDuel, they're basically the same price, Darvish and Carrasco are. It's a little different on DraftKings, which we'll get to. But of those three guys, who really stands out to you?
Well, they kind of stand out for different reasons, I guess. I mean, I'll start by saying that as I looked more carefully at this, at first I was a little, you know, feeling a little like I'm not sure who I'm going to go with.
First, you were just waking up and kind of just knocking the sleep
out of your eyes. Well, I just want to point out one thing, which is, and I know this is going to be short anyway, but this is, I feel like, worth it. I just want to immortalize what I kind of have gone through today just to make this podcast happen. And hopefully when you someday write my biography, Doug, which you're licensed to do in my will, let it be known that, first of all, I woke up at an ungodly hour to come down here and do the podcast.
8:15 Eastern.
Yeah, that's way earlier. I had been waking up at more like 9:45 or 10.
That's true.
So that's very, very early. I went and tried to get... I picked up a dirty cup that had two fingers worth of water in it, filled it up with water, come in here and take a sip, only to find out, Doug, those two fingers, seltzer, not just water. So I had a slight bubbles. And I've been dealing with this whole podcast, not saying a damn thing, all right? Then I come in here and it's... so steamy. Today's supposed to be more than 100 degrees if you account for humidity.
All right, moving on from
this. And I'm sitting in here. And I'm just saying, when it all comes down to the end, I really, really hope that people know what I went through. It's when they crush it. When
no one knows how to connect
moving,
to the people like
you. Moving on.
I mean, the people.
If you're going to make smart comments, you're going to get smart answers. When I looked at the slate, what I thought was, so Darvish and Archer, you have two guys that have legitimate upside but real question marks today. Darvish in particular is a really interesting one because you pointed this out off the air after his last start, but now that they are talking more aggressively about bumping his pitch count back to the previous levels, people forget with Darvish, he was a guy that, you know, supposedly he could just pitch 150 pitches in a game. They're not doing that with him this year because they're probably once bitten and twice shy on him missing time. But if they're talking about stretching him, that could be a guy who comes in with one explosive blowout performance. And his previous performances haven't been bad, by the way. The thing with him, though, the bad park, tough matchup with the Tigers, so I'm not looking to jam him in cash games. And Archer is kind of the same way. I mean, he's a guy whose K numbers have been way up. He's kind of similar to Price in some ways this year. But the 168 Ks and 143 innings is great. The circus around A-Rod in New York notwithstanding, he could still just go in there and strike out 9 guys and have a great start. But I wouldn't be surprised to see the Yankees, you know, lefty heavy lineup.
Yeah, I hate
knock
the park
him a little bit too.
Yeah, I hate the park for him, even though the Yankees are just not a very good team anymore.
Right, his baseline is going from Tampa to New York, and the Yankees aren't a good team. But again, top bottom five strikeout rate, and then there's Carrasco for me, who's just like a kind of a why bother guy today.
Well, let me make the distinction for Carrasco, and this is why I was kind of sectioning off. Carrasco is a why bother ish guy, considering the other ones on FanDuel. On DraftKings, he's 6,900. So you look at these the other pitchers that we just mentioned are all basically 9,000 or above. This is just a mispricing on Carrasco, plain and simple. And I don't know if it's a miss. Again, I'll never try to figure out totally the algorithms that they have going on some of these. I mean, outside of FanDuel's, you know, like, let's all have a joke in the office and give A-Rod 696. Besides something like that, the Carrasco price for me is simply a mistake. And yes, he got bombed the game against Minnesota where... are you wondering if I played him? I did. But then he comes back last game against the Yankees, and it's just fine again, right? He's seven innings, 9 Ks. So the concern over if something's broken with him at coming off that disaster, because pitchers that have disastrous games, you do have to actually kind of wonder if there's something wrong, especially guys that are pretty good. Like, not like getting knocked around and dinked and dunked. Guys that really get shelled.
Sure, he has a worst start in 3 years.
Exactly. Right. Like, that is a huge trouble spot for a pitcher. And he just... basically proves that that's not the case. 6,900 for me is just lock and load time. It's a no-brainer for cash games. You get so much savings on DraftKings. You don't need to worry about it. You can roster any of the other guys we mentioned and still pay up for bats in basically any situation. Yeah. It's simply a mistake.
The definition of a must-play. Uh-huh. And the only point I was going to make about the Angels, and on DraftKings, again, the price is just wrong, so... please don't let what I say here influence your decision to play him in cash games. Frankly, in probably big tournaments too. I mean, again, you're just looking on a points per dollar basis. So he doesn't need 10 strikeouts in this game to make it pay. But the Angels, 15.4% strikeout rate against right-handed pitching this year, best in the league. Not a team you want to go for elite K upside with. But again, 6,900 is like the amount you spend on just like some rookie bum. Who yeah. can't pitch, you know, so not a guy who has pitched at ace levels in the recent past. So.
Yeah, you're just, I mean, the money line alone, it's gonna be hard to get a money line favorite like he is. Like, he's like minus 160 going in. It's hard to get a money line favorite at that price from just a mediocre pitcher on a good team. Like a Ross Stripling today goes in today as a big money line guy against the Dodgers. He's Ross Stripling. He's not that good. But like, right. it's just not the case. Anyway, so
Carrasco's sandwiched by Ivan Nova and Sean Manaea today.
There you go. That like, pretty much tells you the whole story. And he faces a team that, while they don't strike out a lot, they aren't very good either.
No.
So I think that pretty much covers the pitching. There are some interesting things. I'm not looking too far down the salary scale, just with so many guys in good situations slash no one's really, except for Strasburg, you're not really totally breaking the bank on any of these arms. For me, I mean, look, we could spend all day. People ask in the chat. We have a chat room up on the site where people are just jumping in there all day asking questions, giving their opinions. It's great. It's a nice little community we have built. Over there, but well, excuse me. Well, the community build itself. We just put the chat room up on the site.
We did a good job putting that chat room in. By the way, I remember we were slaving over it,
and that was Blake that did it. So it wasn't. We really didn't have anything to do with it. But it's the people that are in there, and there's the regulars, and there's the first timers in there. They're in there, but a lot of times I'll ask, so and so, good GPP play? ? Really. You can make the case for tournaments. You can make the case for anybody. I guess some are better than
others.
Explain
why you can make the case for anyone.
Because for baseball, this is going to sound such like a cop out. For baseball, you can just be good on a day. Like you can really just at any price point, you can just be good. The worst pitcher, like Roberto Hernandez, who is basically taken off the trash heap by the Braves, can come out there and just pitch well for like five innings. You know, run a little good on balls landing in people's gloves. Get a strikeout here and there and get the W, and all of a sudden for like 5,000 on FanDuel, the guy's good. Is that going to happen 9 times out of 10?
Probably.
No, it's going
to happen. Oh, no. Yeah, the same thing.
It's going to happen 1 time out of 10 or less. But that's the thing with tournaments. You need to grab those 1 time out of 10 opportunities or 1 time out of 100 opportunities that no one else is seeing. So it's hard for when people ask, who's a good tournament play? Everybody, kind of. You know, like.
Well, that's not totally true. I mean, there's still. It's not is it who's a good tournament play. It's can you play this guy in a tournament, I'd say. You can say yes to basically anyone. I'd say, like, still you're going to need to figure out something for expectation over the course of a season. Oh. If you just jam random guys in there, you're going to lose.
Oh, definitely. Okay, yeah. So maybe I was overstating it. My point being, it was that you can make a case for everyone. The cases are much better for players. In terms of, like if a game is going in course, obviously the case for playing those guys is much better than it would be for some, you know, random donkey hitter hitting in Petco on a given day. What I'm saying is, can you play the guy? Yes.
Sure. Know? And let's I don't know if we've ever gone deeper into separation and the whole idea in the podcast
really.
Before, but sometimes people like the higher level concept. So separation, this is like when people talk in a chat room about, well, this guy's going to be low ownership today, so that's good for a big tournament. If you're kind of new to DFS or gambling in general, this is basically the gambling concept known as separation. The easiest way to outline this is thinking about survivor pools in the NFL. So if we're in a survivor pool with 9 other friends and say like the New England game, New England's playing the Browns and they're 20-point favorites, and you think you're pretty sure in talking to all your friends that everyone's going to play New England. Now, they're easily the most favored team in the NFL in that case. Say they're going to win 80% of the time, 85% of the time. But if you know that 9 of your 10 friends are playing that team, even if you can pick another team that's going to win 65% of the time, it's still correct to go in the other direction, because in that 15% of the time that New England loses, and you have your 65% team, well, if your team loses too, then okay, everyone loses. But in the 80 or 15% of the time they're going to lose, and then 65% of those times you're going to win, and then you just win the whole thing. Versus if you just play New England too, you've gained nothing, because even if you win, well, everyone wins, and even if you've lost, everyone lost. Now, it's not so straightforward in DFS baseball, because first of all, you don't have complete information about who's going to be played, but you do know, you can say pretty reliably who, like, you knew yesterday that Noah Syndergaard was going to be an 80% start, right? So you don't need separation in cash games, but in big tournaments, if you look at him and say, like, he's such an obvious play for this early slate. If I can just find anyone who's going to be different than him, and he happens to have a bad game, like he happened to yesterday, then you're essentially eliminating 80% of the field that goes in his direction. So when we say anyone can be a good big tournament play, that's because, like yesterday, so say you had Shin-Soo Chu at a 30% ownership, and he just randomly somehow isn't a part of their 9 runs and 20 hits or whatever, like right. just 0 for 5 somehow. But if you were part of the 30% of people who played, you know, someone else in a similar price range and just said, yeah, he's not quite as good, but hey, everyone's going to play Chu. It's so obvious, you know, then you can get, you can break away. So that's why you can sort of go deeper in some other directions and build an advantage. Like if you know, like today's a good example with A-Rod, like he probably will be something like a universal play at those cheap prices and probably rightfully in big tournaments. But yeah, so anyway, that's separation in a nutshell. If you're ever confused, if you want to know more about that, hop in the chat room. I'm sure we can talk more about it there.
In baseball, it's even harder too because the player pool is so big. So it just gets spread out so far down the line too. It's right. Like not even like NFL where it's, you know, where the player pool is smaller and the general knowledge base is stronger just from the casual fan knows a lot more than for NFL. Baseball is just not the same. So you got, sometimes you just get natural separation just by having a theme to pick. Like you just, because right. You're just picking your themes and that would be called in this case, probably stacking, you know, stacking or double stacking teams. Like if you just like certain teams and you stack or double stack them, you're just going to gain the separation because there's just built in separation because baseball, there's 1,000 players. I know 1,000 right. players don't play every day, but there's the player pool for baseball is so much bigger than any other sport. So
no, that's very, very worthwhile to point out. It's also why you need to go out on a limb less in baseball, in my opinion. Like,
right.
As opposed to like basketball, where inevitably in basketball, you'll see some guy who's like just a basement price backup be in the top GPP lineup because nobody plays him.
Right.
But in basketball, like every other guy basically gets some ownership. You know?
Right.
So anyway. But yeah, no, I think that covers it. And this stuff is tough, but this is the stuff that really will separate you, pun intended. As you get better at DFS going forward. So just sorry for the detour, but thought that'd be helpful.
All right, let's take a look at some bats, and we're going to need to close that a little earlier than usual, like we said at the top, but we can run through a couple. We won't go position by position here, but we'll go through a couple teams that stand to have, or that are in pretty good spots today going in. Heading in with the implied run totals, Red Sox pushing up near 6 right now against Corbin. Rangers still coming up. I mean, the Rangers are just a really good team right now. And they get another good game in Texas against Aníbal Sánchez. They're in a good spot. And those are pretty much the two teams that are jumping out to me at the top. They're the only ones that we have as implied run totals over 5. So does it kind of start and stop with you with Red Sox and Rangers? Or are you thinking that we're going to need to sort of just spread it out between a bunch of different teams today? What are your thoughts here?
No, I think that's the place to begin, especially for cash game lineups. Red Sox in particular, I mean, the righty bats they have against a guy in Corbin who's just not recovered to his pre-surgery self. That's a terrific game. But there are some interesting games, I think, around the fringes that that I think are at least worth noting. There's the Milwaukee-Cincinnati game. Worth noting there, our site and plenty of others will show weather concerns in Milwaukee today, but it doesn't matter because they can just cover the roof.
Yeah, we haven't figured out the dome algorithm on the weather status bar.
Seems like we could probably.
And it's unfortunate too because like people come in, like the casual fan comes in and sees the weather status bar on our thing, and they just don't know, and then they ask a question, and then they feel silly, and it's not their fault because like we just haven't figured out how to just get that out of there.
Yeah, we'll put that on Blake's list.
Right.
But yeah, Jimmy Nelson and Homer Bailey, they're just not inspiring any great confidence in anyone. After that though, and then that's another high total game, so it's kind of going to be a chalky one, I would guess. There's kind of an interesting game in the Seattle-Oakland game because you have two pitchers, Ariel Miranda and Sean Manaea, who don't, again, like, I'm not thrilled when I see either of those names. And it's an 8 total there right now. That's lines going up.
Park.
I mean, I get that the park is there, but it's not like we've had plenty of Oakland games this season. 8 is a low total. 8 is, you know, when good pitchers pitch against each other in good parks.
Yeah, it's actually come down. It started at 8.5 and came down to 8. I think the problem with those two teams is not so much that the pitchers are bad, is they get when you get to the bottom of the lineup with both those teams, really after you get out of the 4 spot for both those squads. Like, so the Mariners will play platoon matchups usually at the top. They'll usually go something like Gutierrez, maybe, and then they have Cruz in the middle, but who's obviously fantastic against lefties. But after that, like Cano and Seager don't really, those are, it's clearly their worst splits. And after that, the Mariners have nobody. They're trying out like, you know, Heredia, Guillermo Heredia, exactly. Like Sean O'Malley. Like these are just not names. And the A's are kind of in the same position. They have Valencia in the middle of the order who's good. They have Chris Davis who's been great this year. But after that, it's like there's just nothing. They'll probably bat Semien at the top. Semien's actually a really interesting play at shortstop. He's coming in still on the cheaper side of things for his matchup. But they're just not. They just don't run deep enough to string tons and tons of runs together. I'm kind of with you, by the way.
And by the way, I think this is another concept worth just touching on very briefly, but run distribution across a lineup is not an even curve. It's distributed more towards the top. And mm-hmm. some teams have a more dramatic distribution than others. And actually being more top heavy is, oddly, it's more of a case to play the hitters in that team. Because you're not considering the Sean O'Malley's of the world anyway. But if, and this, these numbers are completely made up. I wish I had them in front of me. But say that a more balanced team like the Red Sox spreads their runs out throughout the lineup. You're actually, every run scored by the, you know, Brents or whoever is batting ninth on a given day is a run not scored by guys in the front of the lineup. So if the, if you know for a fact that the last four guys aren't going to do anything, but they're still, the team is still going to score four or 4.25 oh. runs in a game, mm-hmm. that's awesome. Then you're pumped to take the first four guys. So, and it's not that dramatic. Like, you know, it's not that the last guys will never score and the first front guys will always score, but that's actually a case, in my opinion, for taking good hitters who bat among other good hitters, but on teams that are not as evenly distributed.
And I want to be clear about something. Our system likes the A's and the Mariners today. Like the players I mentioned, the Valencias and Davises and Semiens and Cruz, our system likes them. I was more speaking to why I thought the total was low.
No, that makes sense. And I guess I'm just trying to read more into, because I think as people are understanding more to use Vegas odds, which is a step in the right direction for them, I feel like sometimes that's all people look at, and they don't, you know, they don't give any context to the numbers, and that can be a big mistake.
Yeah, in baseball especially, there are so many contextual things that go into projection making that Vegas sort of does cover, not all of it, of course, but they cover a part of it, and a part that would be really hard to evaluate on individual basis, like how good is another team's bullpen? Well, we're gonna kind of have to It's really good when Chapman pitches, you know, like, but it's really terrible when the sixth man pitches. So bullpens like are all not created equal. So Vegas can help even some of this, like smooth some of those things out for us rather than just going case by case, especially when we don't know exactly what a team will deploy in a certain situation, how the weather definitely impacts things. Like Vegas does sort of, like I said, smooth out some of these multipliers.
Well, they've just been doing this a lot longer than anyone right. in the DFS community has been. And there have been very, very smart people betting against them and trying to make them lose their shirt. And so they've been in these trenches just for a lot longer. And that really goes a long way. Worth noting that they do have different, you know, different goals in mind than we do. Like sure. their goals mm-hmm. are not to provide any individual analysis of a given player and how many fantasy points he will score in a given day. So that's, again, why you need the context. I will say that our system does account for that lineup, that run distribution thing, you know, guys being in the beginning and the end mm-hmm. and so on. But again, if you're just looking at the odds and going from there, that
and we spend a lot of time looking at what Vegas's impact is. Like, is it like we look at things a lot of times in terms of multipliers? Like, this thing is worth X amount of increase or decrease in an average expectation for a player, right? So we spend a lot of time saying, right. should this Vegas total on this one input be worth X or X times 0.5, you know what I mean? So like we spend a lot of time just trying to figure out and even smooth over the smoothing of what it takes to really project yep. things. But Vegas is a good, I think in a lot of ways is a good catch-all when you're trying to evaluate all these other things.
Yeah, it's a terrific place to begin.
I think let's rifle through a couple, just maybe some value plays. We mentioned the Red Sox, you know, Poppy's coming in. I'm actually shocked that Poppy, he got like basically carried off the field on Wednesday and then came back and played on Thursday, which seems insane. The Red Sox are an interesting situation today. Betts sat out yesterday with an injury. He might be out again. That pushes a bunch of guys up the lineup a little bit. They'll have to change things around. They were hitting Pedroia lead off now. So the Red Sox actually have been one of those teams that all season has been, you pretty much knew exactly what their lineup was going to be going in. They really haven't deviated at all, but now it's starting to look like they could. So yep. take a look at that Red Sox lineup. If they were to set Betts or even Ortiz to give them a day off again today, then they could really have some dramatic changes. Like we said, you mentioned the A's are a team that's coming up as value plays for us, especially on FanDuel. And you know, the Cubs are always up there, though. Their prices are getting to the point where, because they're so good on almost every single day or over the course of the whole season, they do become a little bit of a problem when it comes to price. Are there any other just individual plays that are standing out to you before we kind of jump out of here?
Yeah, I think so. There's a couple of cheap guys I was looking at. We've talked about him 1,000 times, but Alex Bregman showed what, you know, someone can do just on a cheap price. Goes 1-for-6 with a double and scored 22 fantasy points
right.
by getting 2 RBIs and 2 runs scored, double and a walk. Again, when guys are that cheap and getting regular opportunity, you just should be looking at them. That price is continuing to inch up, mm-hmm. and we'll reach that 3,000 range, we think, in the not-too-distant
future. He's a great player if you're not going to play A-Rod today. Like, if you're going to come in at third base.
Yeah, yeah. And we're on DraftKings, where I think there's multi-position eligibility there. Then at second base is another guy, Chase Utley, who, you know, perhaps doesn't have the highest ceiling, but again, given the great opportunity and the super low price, Teddy's got a nice matchup against Devon Nova, and right now, you know, there might be more persuasive filler coming in as the day goes along, but if everything were to hold right now, he would be a guy I'd be looking at second base as well.
And just two more, and I'm just going to finish off with the office, a couple outfielders here. And well, one, you have Stanton facing a lefty and Rodon going, it's in Miami, but really almost, I don't want to say this, it's like an everyday thing, but most times when Stanton's facing a lefty, you need to seriously look at it. At 3,800 on FanDuel, he's probably just the chalk. I can't imagine that he's probably, I suspect he's the highest owned at least outfielder on FanDuel today going in, because everyone knows that he's just great against lefties. And the other guy that we're contractually obligated to mention here is Bryce Harper, 4,100 on FanDuel, somewhere in that same range on DraftKings. He sat out the last couple games with the neck, I believe it's a neck injury. He faces off Folty against Atlanta today. I know our system is going to say it's Bryce Harper. He's facing a mediocre righty in a good situation. It's going to jam him in. It's going to jam him into optimal lineups, and I know that we're just going to get an absolute avalanche of people in chat with Harper !! Harper. What are you guys doing? Thoughts?
Yeah, play him. I mean, if he plays, I keep a close eye on it.
I kind of hope he doesn't play.
Well, and again, I don't think you can kill anyone for waiting to see him come back and not go over three with three strikeouts. Like, that last performance was concerning enough to where you could look and just say, like, why don't we just wait and see? Because if he comes back, Washington feels some sense of urgency. He feels weird in his first at bat. He could get pulled. So I wouldn't be, like, you know, shoving him in there necessarily. I would be psyched about it, but I think you can make a case there either way, frankly. I personally would play him if he were back in the lineup, but I wouldn't call anyone a nasty name if they didn't.
Yeah, I'm just looking at a note on him real quick. They said his neck is still the same, which I'm assuming that means the same as in bad.
Good reporting there.
or just not like he has the same neck he
he's
had
still,
yesterday.
He's sticking with the same neck, even though it's not working that well.
That neck looks just the same. It's like this. That neck looks so similar to the one you had yesterday.
Yeah, big, thick, strong neck.
Anyway, so I'm kind of hoping. I would say, too, if he doesn't play today, I could see him going on the DL, because why bother? The Nats are in the race here. They need him bad. So I'm just kind of, partly for my own sanity, I'm just hoping that they just set him out again, so I don't have to spend most of the day answering questions about why we're such donkeys for having Harper in the lineup.
Yeah, man.
All right, dude, it's been a great week of podcasts, I have to say. We heard great things from the chatters about how, you know, this is, we're the best. I don't know. There was other things.
I humbly accept your praise.
this was great. We're sitting in the same room. Bat will be back next week over the phone doing podcasts. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is a site, DFSR.com for short. Head on over, grab some free content, and grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. James is dying to say something.
I just want to say you're welcome again for all I went through to be here this morning.
Take it easy, everyone. See you Monday.
Adios.